You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
That'll be our go trailer, but obviously the guy looking around the room, seeing that there's a light coming from out the door, everybody's together inside, but he realizes, you know what, he needs to go. And that's what this series is all about. We're talking about go. We're talking about going. And as I said before, it's not an exclamation point. That handle is a period. It is go, period, because it's supposed to be part of who we are as believers, as Christ followers. And this series has also been part of our, just me reviewing and going through our core values as a church and looking at who we are, what makes us who we are. And our core values, you know, if, I don't know if you're familiar with that phrase before, but basically it's just kind of a bunch of things. There's 10 of them. That kind of define why we do what we do, how we do what we do, and you know, they kind of keep us on track. Obviously, our process, our C3 process, community, congregation, and caring is the way, but the core values kind of define and guide and direct that. And so last week, I did not share our core value, and I mentioned it on Facebook, if you follow us at facebook.com/mc3church. But last week we talked about disciples and how, you know, we need to communicate Christ even if we feel unworthy. And the core value that I was supposed to talk about was biblically. And means biblically is just that everything we do as a church is going to come through the filter of Scripture. That we're going to let Scripture guide and direct us as to how we do what we do, why we do what we do. So just want to set you up for that. But I want to talk to you today a little bit about enough. And maybe you guys can help me out with this, but we live in a culture, and you know, maybe it's we live in a world, I don't know, maybe, but we live in a culture where we want to give enough, we want to do enough. I remember, especially in graduate school and in college, we had contract graded courses, and basically what that meant was they would say, if you want an A, you need to do these 73 things, write this 5,000-page paper, and, you know, read these 54 books. If you wanted a B, read a book. You know, I don't know. And it basically worked its way down so you could get a C. I don't think they actually gave you a D option. But basically, that's the way it was. You could choose what kind of grade you wanted by the amount of work that you would do. And, you know, I had some very, very overachieving friends that boasted on how good they are, how many great, you know, A's they got. And for me, you know, it just wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it for me to be like, hey, look at you. Because all of you are asking me, right? You want to know, Sean, tell me, what did you get in soteriology? Because you're all begging to know that answer. See, obviously the reality is you don't even know that I took a class called soteriology. But I did better in soteriology than I did in eschatology. But you don't care about that either. So I decided, you know, instead of getting straight A's and killing myself and my newly found marriage, not found, I kind of knew what I was getting into. It was like, oh, what's that? But my new marriage, we had been married and then went down to seminary. So I went for the lower grades. You know, a couple times I would go for the B, sometimes I would go for the C. And the issue for me was that I wanted to do just enough. That's all I cared about. I just wanted to get the grade. I didn't care about getting an A. I didn't care about getting, you know, wow, look at that test. You were so amazing. So I didn't study all night for those kind of tests because I wanted to do enough. And there's a lot of areas in our lives where we want to do enough, right? I mean, it's who we are. You expect to have to do enough and no more. If your job is from 9 to 5, when your boss says, hey, can you stay till 5:30? You would say, well, no, I did enough. I stayed till 5. That was what it was required of me, and I did enough. You know, when it comes to, you know, you're in the drive-thru at McDonald's, and you're paying for your meal, and they'll say, you know, that's $3.74. You give them $3.74, or you swipe your card and do whatever. But you don't give them $4. You're not like, hey, thanks for your cordial greeting over the headset. Have an extra quarter. You know, we don't do that. We give enough. We do what we need to do, and that's enough. You know, and one of the, I don't know, we have a large family. There's 6 of us. And if we had anybody to our family to go out to dinner to any kind of a restaurant, which we rarely do for multiple reasons. But as soon as you add anybody else to our party, we are that parties of 8 or more. You follow me with the parties of eight or more? The bottom of the menu, it says an automatic 20% gratuity will be added to parties of eight or more. I hate that. Like, I mean, I appreciate service and stuff, but I'm slowly learning that I guess 15% isn't good enough anymore. So I'm working out of that. I'm working up to like 16% for my tips. But, you know, I hate when someone's like, we're going to automatically take your tip from you. 20%, more than I would give anyway, because I want to give enough. I want to get by with the minimum. And so that's the way we live. And there's so many areas where this happens in our lives. I'm sure you can think of many things. Because I'm not. I'm not. That's what I could come up with as I was thinking about it. But here's the deal. When we want to give enough, there's a lot of places we hope people don't give enough for us. Right? Like your doctor. You know, you go in for your physical because you need to, you know, you need to sign off for a medical thing at work or whatever. And they do your physical, and that's what you told them to do. I need a physical. Check my heart rate, you know, check my blood pressure, all of that. But say, in the midst of their physical, they discover, wow, you know, this guy is like doesn't have a heart. It's not working anymore. You don't want your doctor to say, oh, well, no, I was just giving the physical. I was just doing enough. You want your doctor to say, hey, you've got a serious issue. You need to go to the hospital right now. You don't want that, right? You agree with me? You don't want your doctor to do enough. You want them to do more than enough. And you expect that. We love that. We love when people do more than enough. Going back to the restaurant idea, if you're one of those people that tip often, you love it when your waiter or your waitress does something a little bit above and beyond. You're like, well, that was great. And in our culture, that kind of stuff stands out. When someone says, hey, you know, this is what's required of me, but I'm going to give you more for whatever reason, we're like, wow, that's great. We want to go to businesses that work that way, you know? Hey, we appreciate, you know, you're coming here and you know, we've worked really hard on, I don't know, cleaning your kitchen. And while we were here, we noticed there were a couple of problems, so we fixed them. What? I didn't ask you to do that. And we like that. You know, we had a pellet stove installed last week. I am now Central PA Hick boy. That took me 12 years. So, now someone mentioned I need a pickup truck and country music. And I'll maybe do the pickup truck thing, but I am not going to do the country music. I'm sorry. Still city in me, okay? But anyway, we got a pellet stove installed. And when the guys were here, they did a great job. But here's something that bothered me. And I don't want to, you know it was from Creekside, and they did a great job. I love it. I'm not being anti them. But one thing that bothered me is that when they attached the thing to the wall, the unit to the wall to go out of the house, there were three black screws and one silver screw. And I'll tell you what, that silver screw bothers me. You know, and part of my thinking is like, why didn't you do enough? Was it that hard to go get another black screw? You know, and again, is that a big deal? Everything else hopefully is secure and safe and all that. But that bothered me because I felt like that wasn't enough. And so, do you follow? Like, we are in this culture where we expect to give enough. We expect other people to do more than enough. And I want to talk this morning about giving. And looking at a passage that maybe, and I know that you are familiar with part of this passage. If you've been in church, if you've been in the State College, Penn State area, you're going to hear a phrase in here that you cannot have missed. You don't have to be in the State College area. If you're in the country, there's a phrase that we're going to talk about here that you have heard coming from the Penn State direction. But I want to talk about this passage and look at this idea of enough. Because we live in a country, we have our rights. We've got our list of the things that we are expected to do. We have contracts. We have labor disputes over contracts and stinky officiating because of it. But anyway, I'm not going to share my opinion. But you know what I mean? We've got all these areas where, like, this is what's required and that's enough. And Jesus turns this whole thing on its head. And so I want to look at this passage. It's in Matthew chapter 5. And if you have your Bible or the YouVersion app, you can go to Matthew 5. And tap on verse 38, because that's where we'll be starting. And it's also on the screen there if you do not have a Bible there, or paper, or app. But this is what Jesus says. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. So I want to just kind of hang out here, right on the screen, right on this passage, and talk a little bit about some things that we see in here. First of all, Jesus is saying, he says, you've heard that it was said, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. There was a in the Old Testament law, there was a concept that was called lex talionis, which was this idea of eye for an eye. If someone wrongs you, if someone hurts you and causes you to go blind in your eye, the law allows for you to take out one of their eyes to get back the retribution, the recompense, if you will, to make up for the wrong that was done to you. He says the same thing with if there was a tooth. They knocked out your tooth, then you're allowed to take out their tooth. And it expands also the thing. If they killed your donkey, then you can have their donkey. And it goes to this whole area. But the interesting thing is I was reading about this, I'm like, you know, why did God even put that in there? Like, is God all about, like, I'm going to get you back? Because if we look at Jesus, which we will in a moment, Jesus isn't about getting us back. He's about taking the punishment himself. But like, why did God put that in there? And the interesting thing as I was reading is that the issue wasn't that God was forcing retribution. He actually, the law allowed for them to not take back. But the reason this lex talionis, the reason this idea was in the law, was to keep people from going above and beyond and taking more revenge. Like, oh, well, you took out my eye. Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cut off your hand and take away your foot and your donkey. You know, and to kind of keep it from escalating beyond what happens. And you guys know that's the way it is, right? I mean, this happens to you. Well, you're like, oh, well, I'm going to get them back because they did that to me. And then, oh, then they're going to get back to you. I mean, you know, we have wars happening over that kind of stuff. We have pass interference and inappropriate personal foul penalties over that kind of stuff. If you watch football, you know, there's all these things that it's this, well, they're going to do this. Well, I'm going to do something bigger and they're going to do it bigger. And so the law was set up to keep that from happening. You know, if someone does something to harm you, they were like, okay, it's fair to get back at them. But if you do, you need to keep it within the frame, within the scope of what happened. So if someone causes you to lose your eye, you can't take away both of their eyes. You can't chop off their head. He says you can take their eye. If they, you know, if you lose a tooth, you know, don't take their whole jaw. Take their tooth, because it's not, you're not going to go beyond what was expected. So that was the law. That was what the Jews that Jesus was talking to, Jesus being a Jewish man talking to a Jewish audience. He said, look, you guys know the law. He says, but I tell you. And again, if you see a big but, you got to watch out for it. So there's a big but there. He says, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. And this word resist doesn't mean like, you know, oh, I'm going to stay away from you. He's like, don't try to get back. Don't try to get retribution. Don't try to fight off an evil person. This is crazy. Jesus is saying, look, if someone is wronging you, he says, suck it up. Take it like a man or a woman, if you're a woman. He says, you know, he says, this is what you know the law, but you know what, I'm kind of changing things a little bit. He says, don't resist an evil person. He says, don't do it that way. You could do enough. Your rights require you to take an eye if they take your eye. But Jesus says, look, I'm telling you, don't do it that way. Why don't we go a little bit above and beyond that? And so he says, don't do that. And now he starts listing some different rules. He says, first of all, if someone slaps you on the right cheek, if someone slaps you on the cheek, and that is not an uncomfortable thing, he says, you know what? Turn the other cheek. Don't get back at them. And you've heard that phrase, turn the other cheek. Don't get back at them. Just say, hey, look, here you go. Here's the other one. Because Jesus is kind of is switching things. He's saying we're used to getting revenge and getting what we deserve and doing enough. And Jesus is like, watch this. I'm going to show you that you need to do what you don't deserve. Because he does for us what we don't deserve. So he says, if someone slaps you on the face, turn the other cheek. Give him the other cheek. And then he goes on and says, if someone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. Or it might say in your version, if they want to take your tunic, give them your cloak. And here's the deal. The law, again, required that if you did something, say you stole someone's shirt, I don't know, maybe you ripped it or whatever in our culture, you know, that you could be sued to get your shirt. Someone could sue you to get the shirt that you had off on your back, right? So that's sort of your undergarment, your clothing. But the law said, no matter what happens, just for the sake of the health of people, that You, no matter what they do to you, you cannot take someone's cloak. You cannot take someone's coat. Because the coat might be the only thing they have to keep them warm. It might be essentially their home. It might be what they live in. So in the Old Testament law, it says, look, you can sue someone and take their undergarment, but it is against the law to take their coat. You're not allowed to do that because that might be all that they have. And Jesus says, look, if someone's suing you and wants to take your shirt, the law says that you've done enough. But he says, give them your coat as well. Go that extra step. Go beyond what is expected. Give them more than enough. And then he goes on again, and here's the phrase that you are well familiar with at this point. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Or your version might say, go the second mile, or go the extra mile. And so the concept here, we hear that phrase all the time, go the extra mile. And again, we've heard the phrase the second mile a lot with the whole Penn State scandal issue. But the idea here is biblical, so forget all that. Let's talk about the Bible. It says, look, the law requires, and let me just get the name of it here. It was called the rule of Angeroi. I don't know if I pronounced that right or not, but it was this rule, the Romans, and I just kind of, if you were here for the Word series, you're familiar with that. But basically, the Romans were in control. They were an empire. And if you know anything about an empire, there's always a Darth Vader. No, wait. If you know anything about an empire, it's because they came in and took over. And so the Romans were in control of this whole land, a huge area that they actually took over from the Greeks, Alexander the Great. And now this might start bringing up some memories of the Word series. We talked about the Romans set up roads throughout the land. So the Romans were in charge. And this rule that the Romans had, this rule of Angeroi, maybe I'll just kind of mumble it and then it sounds like I'm doing it right. The rule of Angeroi basically said that as occupants, at the fact that Rome is in control, as a Jewish person, any Roman soldier could conscript you to help them out. If they had a job to do or a journey to take, by law, you as a Jewish person, as a person living in that land, since Rome was in control, you by law had to help them out. So if it could be something serious like this Roman soldier's, you know, got a huge amount of, I don't know, maybe it's stones that he's putting in for a road, he could say, you know what, you, by, you know, Angeroi, because of that law, you need to now help me. But the law said, the Roman law said, look, you have to help them. If a Roman soldier is like, I'm really tired and I've got a lot of armor to carry, they can grab a Jewish person and say, look, you carry my armor. And the law said you had to do it by threat of death or punishment. But the law also said you only have to go 1 mile. You do not have to go more than 1 mile. The law sticks you to 1 mile and that was it. And Jesus says to these people that know this law, that probably have been picked upon once or twice already to have to carry something for somebody, to have to do something for a Roman soldier, he says, look, you know the law says 1 mile, but I'm telling you, go the second mile. If they make you go 1 mile, go with them too. Go above and beyond what is expected. And that's what Jesus is saying. He's saying all these things, you're aware of all these rules, you're aware of all these laws, but I'm telling you, don't just do enough. Do more than enough. Go be above and beyond that. He says, give to the one who asks you and don't turn away from them. Don't turn away the one who wants to borrow from you. Jesus is saying, look, you know the rules. Man, I spit a lot there. Sorry about that. You know the rules. You know that you have to go this far. But Jesus is saying, look, go the extra mile. Go above and beyond. Go that second mile. Do the extra thing. Do what is not expected of you. Do more than enough. And so here's what I want you guys to get this morning. And that's this idea of give generously, even when it doesn't make sense. Give generously, even when it doesn't make sense. Give generously, even when it doesn't make sense. And you need to understand that when Jesus is saying this to his audience, this doesn't make sense. Because again, you know, with the Roman rule of Angeroi, when someone conscripted you, typically it wasn't because they were really like, I've been traveling for 6,000 miles and could you please just help me out for 1 mile? It was usually like, I'm not carrying this junk. Come here, Jew, you know, and carry my stuff for me. And so they were usually abused in this process. And Jesus is saying, look, this doesn't make sense, but I want you to go the extra mile. You might remember with this rule of anger, a little situation when Jesus was crucified. Remember, Jesus is carrying his cross toward the hill of Golgotha, and he stumbles and stumbles, and finally that's enough. And so what does the Roman do? He says, you, Simon, rule of anger applies right now. You carry his cross. And so Simon was required by law to carry his cross. And so it's that concept. And so Jesus is doing this stuff that doesn't make sense according to logic, according to especially our frame of enough, of doing the minimum, of doing what is necessary to get by. So I want you to get that idea that we need to give generously even when it doesn't make sense. Even when it doesn't make sense. And we'll talk about reasons why it doesn't make sense in a little bit. But that's the concept I want you to get. Give generously, even when it doesn't make sense. So let me just tell you real quick so I don't forget it, and because it's going to play into what we're going to talk about in a little bit. But here's the core value of MC3 that leads and kind of directs where we're going this morning. And that is this core value that we call outrageous generosity. We've looked so far, the first week, at grace centricity and how we need to give grace even when it's not deserved. And the second way, we looked at disciplicity, which we said, live like Jesus, even though it's easier to just like him. You know, it's easier to click like. Being a disciple means living like Jesus. Then last week, we looked at biblically, and this idea of how we need to, we talked about a couple things. We talked about biblically last week. This week, we're talking about outrageous generosity. And here's the core value from our website, mc3church.org. It says, God gave us his son, Jesus, when we least deserved it, and we want to have the same attitude. We value giving lavishly to others, even when it doesn't always make sense. And so that's our value. That is guiding us as a church, and that's why there's things that we do. That's why not having church on a Sunday, which I'm telling you, you want to upset some people, go to a church that's been established for a while and say, let's cancel for a week. You know, and right away, where is he? The treasurer is usually the one to be like, whoa, buddy, no, we're not going to do that. And the awesome part is that our elders and our team is like, no, this is important. We want to give. And so we're going to give up an offering for the sake of that. I mean, you know, anyway, I won't tell you other stories. But that's our core value. And so that's one of the things that guides what we do and how we do it. Are we perfect all the time? Are we always giving all the time to every possible need? No, one, because we can't really give to every need. And two, because, I don't know, I'm a loser sinner and, you know, I make mistakes. We make mistakes. So, but that is kind of what's guiding us and directing us as we do things as a church. So this idea, give generously when it doesn't make sense. So I want to talk real quick about, well, who are we kidding? I don't talk quick. I want to talk for a long time about how to give generously. So let's look at this idea, how to give generously. I mean, Jesus says, look, this is what you need to do. Go the extra mile. Turn the other cheek. Give above and beyond. And I want you to understand, in case I forget to say this, this doesn't mean just money. I mean, that's a big part of it, but it doesn't mean just the dollars in your wallet. It doesn't mean just the zeros in your check account. It's more about even just a lifestyle of giving, saying, I'm going to give to serve other people. I'm going to give of my time for the sake of other people. So please make sure that you understand I'm not talking about just money. That's a part of it, but more than that. So there's a couple of things that we need to do when it comes to giving generously, even if it doesn't make sense. The first thing is that we need to give cheerfully. Cheerfully. We need to give cheerfully. And in 1 Corinthians 9, you have this verse here that you might be familiar with if you grew up in church. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And if you've been around church world, you'll know that word for cheerful is where we get the word hilarious. And it means just to have excitement about it. And stay there for me on this slide. But I want you to understand something about this. This isn't an issue of, like, when you're giving, you're like, I'm happy. I'm putting my offering in. I'm smiling. Or someone says, hey, you know, thank you so much for helping me out when my car broke down last week. And you're like, you're welcome. I'm glad to do it. I mean, the idea isn't just saying nice things or trying to smile. It's this idea of saying, look, when we give, it should be because we want to, because we're excited about it. And as we'll see in a minute, there's going to be risk and there's going to be fear and all that tied into it. But our giving shouldn't be under compulsion. It shouldn't be reluctantly. You know, Jesus, and I'll say this, I'm the pastor of a church, and, you know, if you've been to churches before or been tired of churches before, you know, one of the things you might have heard is all they ever care about is money. That's all they ever talk about. Give your money and God will bless you, which is not true in Scripture. But at the same time, Jesus talked about money more than anything else. He talked about money more than heaven. And so I'm talking about money. And so here's the idea. When it comes to giving, in the Old Testament, you saw a standard. The standard was 10%. Give 10%. It was called a tithe. But then Paul in the New Testament says, you know what? Don't be limited to 10%. Give as your heart desires. Give above and beyond. Go extra. Go the extra mile. And so this is the idea here, is that when we give, when you're giving, like if you think you're putting money in the offering plate, and I'm probably going ahead of myself here. No, I'm right. Okay, this is where I wanted to be. All right, I don't want to ruin the punchline. But when you're giving, like if you're giving because you think, oh, I had a really bad week. I did stuff that God is not happy about. So I'm going to put that in the plate. Oh, man, you should have heard the stuff that I said to my wife yesterday. So can I help you mow your lawn? You know, like if we're giving because we want to earn God's favor or get him to be like, sorry, God, I messed up. So I'm going to be nicer. That is reluctantly and under compulsion. That is forced giving. The other side of this is that we can't give just to so that we can pay God back or try to earn his love. Like, God, man, I don't deserve you. Here's more money. God loves us completely, totally, right now. As is. There's nothing you can do. You might have heard this before. There's nothing you can do to make God love you more. There's nothing you can do to make God love you less. God loves you as is right now. So God doesn't want us to give out of debt, out of duty, out of obligation. He says, do it because you love to give. Do it because you know what? When you give, you're going to bless other people and you're going to be blessed too. And not because I gave $10 and I made $20. You know, it's not that. It's saying, hey, give. Give because, man, what a privilege we have to give to other people. And we'll see in a minute what those things that are kind of holding us back. But the first thing about giving is to give generously. You need to want to do it. Care about doing it. Don't do it to earn whatever. Don't do it just to make someone happy. I mean, one of the things that's always been cool, I remember growing up with my grandparents in Florida. They were very generous. I stayed with them in the summer and while my parents worked up in the north. But every once in a while, they would say, okay, look, we're going to let you pick out a toy. And so we would go to that store. And there was a place called Service Merchandise. You ever heard of that place? It was really weird. Sidetrack. Anyway, they would let you pick out a toy. And I just remember the joy on their faces when they're like, hey, get it. Get what you want. Pick something. And they weren't like, oh man, this kid, why do we have to give him anything? They did it because they wanted to. I mean, we've done it with our kids too. Hey guys, you know what? Because you did this, why don't we go have some fun? Go pick out a toy. Where do you want to go for dinner tonight? Let's celebrate. You know, we love to do those things for family and for friends, but somehow we kind of get this different opinion when it comes to giving to church, giving to God or anything like that. And so I just want you to, as you think about when it comes to giving, and this idea of cheerful giving, kind of reflect on, you know, what is it you love to give to other people? What is it you love having given to you? You know, keep that attitude of like, wow, this is awesome. I'm so glad I get to do this. And that's what giving needs to be for us. So that's one thing is we need to give cheerfully. The second thing we need to do when we give is we need to give secretly. Give secretly. Matthew chapter 6 says this. It says, so when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. And see, the idea here is that there were people, especially in Jesus' time, and I'm sure, you know, I know there are people in our time, because we went to this big, big, big church in Dallas, Texas, where everything had a plaque on it with somebody's name, because they gave generously to that event, or to that room, or that pew. Not that anywhere you see a plaque it's bad. Don't get me wrong here. But the idea was that Jesus says, you know what, you're not giving so that other people can say, look how awesome you are. You know, the idea in here, the buckets are being passed. You're not like whipping out your wallet. Well, that's 100, 200, 400, 7. You know, I mean, like, what's that all about? I don't keep your money, you know? If you're doing it so that other people are like, wow, look how godly you are. You know, like, one, there's probably a deeper heart issue going on there, and you're probably not all that godly anyway. But that's the issue, that it's not about looking impressive. Jesus says here, when you give to the needy, or when you give it anyway, you know, you're not here like, hey, everybody, I am awesomely generous, and I am now giving to people. Come and honor me and tell me how cool you think I am. You know, that's what he's saying. Don't do that, because that's what the hypocrites did. That's what the Pharisees would do. And we talked about the Pharisees a couple weeks ago, and the rules and the rules that they added on top of the rules. And that was one of the things they did. Look how good I am. I gave. And he says, they've received the reward in full. He says, but when you give, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. And you know, it doesn't mean like, oh, I can only give with my left hand. My wallet touches my right hand. Oh, no. But it's a principle here of, hey, you know what? Just be at the point where it's discreet. It's secret. It's between you and God. Not between you and us. And, you know, one of you at this moment, you know, just a few minutes ago, gave me a check to put in the offering plate. And I kind of like held it like this and put it in, you know. I didn't look at it. I don't know what's there. And I don't even know. I mean, the only thing that our finance team tells me is that I need to know, are we in trouble? That's the only thing I know when it comes to our finances. Are we in trouble? Oh, and where's my paycheck? That's the other thing, I suppose, is kind of helpful. But I don't know, and that's on purpose, because I don't want anybody else in here to think that, oh, well, he's being nice to them because he knows what they give. Like, I don't know that. That's not for me to know. And that's not really, the only reason they know, and I don't even think it's they, it's just Michelle, that knows what you give is because somebody has to put it in the bank. But understand that it's a secret thing. It's between you and God, and it's not for you to announce it with trumpets and tell everybody how great you are. We've had people give to us generously, secretly. And I've told you the story probably about how our first Thanksgiving together, we thought it was just going to be us at our little tiny apartment in seminary. And it turned out we ended up having her brother and three of his single college buddies all came over, and then our neighbor downstairs couldn't go home, and so they came with their little girl, and all of a sudden, like, hey, Kendra, welcome to your first Thanksgiving, you know, good luck. And we're like, we couldn't afford much, and I'm telling you, I don't know who knew about this or how they knew about this, but there was a huge turkey on our front doorstep when we came home one day. Like, what? We didn't tell anybody. You know, like, God was just moving somebody to say, I'm going to do this. And it was in secret. And, you know, I don't know if they were across the street going, yeah, all right, you know, cool. Or maybe they were out there for dinner. Maybe like, yeah, well, we were coming to your dinner and we didn't think you had enough, so we thought we'd bring something. But I know that wasn't the case, knowing the people that came. But, you know, it's just the idea of giving in secret. Do it so that people don't know. Now, and don't misunderstand me here, too. I'm not saying, like, oh, no. Somebody knew what I gave. They saw me do that. It's not, that's not the point. I hope you don't miss that. It's not an issue of it has to be secret or it's not going to be blessed by God or anything like that. It's an issue of what's your motivation? Are you doing it so people will say how good you are? Because your first thing, if you're not giving cheerfully, you're doing it so that God will see how good you are. This is so that you think that others will see how good you are. And that's the point. Don't do it that way. You know, we've talked a lot, as I've talked with the elders and just even the plant team as we were developing who we are as a church last summer. People have said to me, hey, have you called the Sentinel? Have you gotten a write-up in the Sentinel yet? And I haven't. And that's been on purpose. Because, you know, there's a lot of things we could do. I mean, we could have put out the word like, hey, Lewistown Sentinel, you need to come and do an article on MC3 because we are canceling church on Sunday to serve all y'all. And they probably would have come and done a wonderful article that says how great we are. And, you know, if they happen to hear about it and show up and say, dude, what are you guys doing? Because you're making a difference in this community. Then I'm like, yeah, I'm all for that. But if it's because we're announcing how awesome we are, how generous we are, then we've missed the point. So understand that when we give, we need to give secretly. It's not an issue between everybody else, how good you are. It's just an issue of you, between you and God. So the third thing then, when it comes to how to give generously, is we need to give unconditionally, which isn't there. There we go. We need to give unconditionally. Two verses here that I'll fly through real quick. Luke chapter 6 says this. What does it say? It says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. That's what Jesus is saying. And then he goes on, there's another passage here, and he says this. He says to this guy, they're having a dinner, he says, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. And see, what Jesus is saying here, and again, there's nothing wrong with giving to other people. There's nothing wrong with someone saying, hey, you know, we really appreciate you having us over for dinner. Why don't you come over for dinner now? There's nothing wrong with that. But Jesus is saying is that when you're doing this stuff, if you're just doing it because you want them to owe you one, because you want them to have a chip in the big game, you know, because there's a card you're going to call in someday, then you've missed the point. We need to give unconditionally, no strings attached. That, you know what, if you have a friend or a neighbor and you give to them and they never talk to you again, we need to say, you know what, that's okay because I'm giving like Jesus. We need to be ready for those no strings attached kind of giving moments. And if we're doing it so that we know, like, hey, I'm going to do this for you because I know, you know, that you, I don't know, you run a used car lot, and I really like that car, so why don't I invite you over for dinner and bring you over with me? And so if you're giving because you expect payment back, then you're not really giving. Giving says, hey, being generous. It doesn't make sense. We're going to do it, and if we get paid back, all right, thank you. Thank you for paying me back. But if you're doing it so that you'll get paid back and you've missed it. And that's what Jesus is saying. You know, don't do stuff just for all the people that can pay you back. Do it for the people that can't. Because that's true giving. That's sacrificing. That's giving that way. And we can't be giving for the sake of people saying thank you. Even if it's not financially returning the favor or whatever the gift you offer. But if you're giving just to someone to say, thank you, you're so wonderful. I know I am. Thank you very much. Like, if that's the reason you're giving, don't give. Even if it's something as simple as a thank you, don't give. Jesus is giving without getting anything back. And again, as we were talking earlier about the C3 opportunities, I'm very interested in meeting real needs. I'm interested in helping people that have needs, not inventing something so that we can say, wow, look how good we were. We helped you out. You know, I'm looking at saying, let's help people that are in need. And whether that's huge needs or minor needs, whether that's your neighbor, you know, that needs help carrying the groceries, whether that's your neighbor that needs help because their house burned down. But that's what we're talking about, is meeting real needs and doing it unconditionally. So those are some ways to give generously, cheerfully, secretly, unconditionally. Do it that way. And that is how you end up giving to people in a way that Jesus is honored by. In a way that excites him. So where are we? Go to the next slide. I think I want slide like, I don't know, 6? Yeah, okay. How about that? Give generously. Even when it doesn't make sense, that's the point. That's what I want you to get. So let me share some roadblocks to giving. What stops us from living this way? What are some obstacles to being generous givers, to being generous livers? That sounds weird. generous liver. Like, oh, that, anyway. Okay. Generous living. Obstacles. The first obstacle that I want to throw out there is stewardship. And if you're not from church circles, if you haven't grown up in the church, this doesn't mean much to you, and I'm cool with that. You don't have to worry about that. But a lot of times, we don't give people that have grown up in church, and one of the excuses that you hear that keeps us from giving is this concept of stewardship. God wants me to be a good steward of the resources that he has given me. And you would be right. God does want you to be a good steward of the resources you have given. A steward is a manager, someone that takes care of them. You don't want to go to your bank teller and say, hey, I'd like to withdraw $20, and have them say, oh, sorry, you know, I saw the money in there. I really wanted to go out with my friends, so we emptied out your account. You'd be like, what are you kidding? That's not your money. You're just the manager. And that's exactly what we are. It's not our money, it's God's money. We're just the manager. But a lot of times we will use the word stewardship as an excuse not to actually help people. Because, you know, well, God doesn't want me not to have that money. I really need these things for my family. I need to give enough. And enough for my family is, you know, 18 flat screen TVs and 6 really, really nice cars. Because I want to be a good steward. And, I drive those cars to church. Okay, great excuse. You know, and that's just one of the obstacles is we get this idea of stewardship and we throw things out like, well, what if they misuse or abuse the money that I give them? On some level, that's God's problem, not ours. You know, if you give to somebody and they completely abuse you and steal the money and never even use it for the purpose, then yeah, stewardship says, you know what? I think I'm going to give to someone else that has a need and will probably use it the right way. That's stewardship. But don't throw this up as like a smokescreen to actually not help other people. First of all, when we talk about giving so that you can't be repaid, you know, that's not very good stewardship either. If you're giving to someone, you want them to repay you back, right? So Jesus says, hey, that's not very good stewardship there. At MC3, you know, one of the things that we've done and we've developed, and maybe you don't even know that this is the way we do it, but we love to meet needs. I love to see the prime groups. I love to see people meet needs when they're connected to relationship. And, you know, if there's someone that works with you, there's someone that says, you know what, I never ever want to come to your church, that's fine. But there's a connection there. There's a person that they're connected to. And so I love this idea of saying, you know what, we're going to be good stewards because there's a lot less chance that someone's going to rip you off. I just got an email a couple weeks ago from the local food shelter saying, hey, look, there's this lady, and they gave her a name, and she's been going around with this letter sharing this story about how, you know, all these problems she has and how she really needs some help. And so the shelter said, hey, we'll be glad to help you. Can I get some more information? And all of a sudden, things kind of turned, and it basically she backed away and pulled out, and they did some more research on this lady who has gone to a bunch of churches in town. Is that complete fraud, complete fake. That's not even her story. That's not the issue. And so, you know, those things will probably happen sometimes. But if there's a connection, if there's a relationship, then that kind of even factors some of that out. So we're being good stewards and we're giving to people and being able to say, hey, look, I know you. I'm helping you. And if God uses this in your life, then great. If not, hey, I'm still going to help you. I'm still going to care for you. And so that's just this idea of stewardship. Don't let that be a smokescreen. We do need to be managers of God's money, but let's not fake it by saying that that's a reason to not give. The second obstacle to generous living, and this is where it gets scary, and that's the idea of surrender. It's scary to give, especially when you give when it doesn't make sense. Giving when it doesn't make sense says, look, I don't have much at all, and I'm giving what I don't have to you. That's scary. But that surrender, and that requires us to kind of fall back on God and say, God, look, you asked me to do this. Your word tells me to do this. I'm doing it. So I'm going to leave it in your hands. And that's a scary place to be. And so I think the issue with surrender is oftentimes we want to wait till we have enough. I was just talking with, you guys know Katrina Templin. She's was part of MC3 for a while. She has a job in Philly now working as a children's director. And she came up yesterday, this weekend, to ask me to do her wedding for her and Tim, which was kind of cool. But we were talking, and I don't even remember what I was saying. We were talking about missions and how, you know, they've been part of a mission trip and what we're going to be doing at MC3. And I'm not going to get into all the details right now. But I will tell you this, that I don't want to wait until we have enough money to give. To have enough money to pull this off. Because we never will have enough. You never have enough. I never have enough. The church will never have enough. We're always going to need more. We're always going to want more. And so the idea here is, let's just say, surrender. God, this is something you've called us to do. So I'm just going to trust you. And he says in his word, my God will provide all of your needs according to his glorious riches. God will provide all of your needs according to his riches. He owns it all. So it's not much for him to be like, oh, okay, here you go. Let me flip you a $6 million coin. I mean, seriously, in God's scheme of things, $6 million is not much at all. God owns it all. We need to surrender and trust that, hey, you've called us to do this, God. You've called me to do this. And so you're going to come through. You're going to provide for me. In interesting little passage in Matthew 6, the Sermon on the Mount, and if you're familiar with this story, Jesus shares about how we don't want to store up treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where they can get stolen. He says, don't spend your time investing on stuff here on earth. He says, you know, invest in things that are going to last for eternity. And the really interesting thing about this passage, again, if you're not from church circles or you're not familiar with this passage, that's cool. But the interesting thing about this is that he says, don't store up treasures on earth, store up treasures in heaven. And then the very next verse says, therefore, do not worry about how God's going to provide for you. And then that's a whole separate passage where he says, you know, look at the birds of the air. Doesn't God provide for them? Look at the lilies of the field. Aren't they beautiful? God provides them. And, you know, even as I've taught it, it's been like, here's a passage over here that talks about treasures in heaven. And then here's a passage over here that talks about worry. But when Jesus was saying it, he said them together. He says, look, invest in the right things and don't worry about it because I'm going to provide for you. God is going to come through. God will provide when we are living generously, when we are giving generously, even when it doesn't make sense. God says, look, I'm going to come through for you. Don't worry about that. I'm going to provide. If you're doing what I've called you to do, I'm going to come through. And I'm sure you don't need to hear from me, but it's a scary place to be. It's a scary place to say, hey, family of six, wife, four young children, I think God wants me to plant a church. How are we going to pay for it? I don't think we are. Wait, you mean give up my really nice salary that I was making? Yeah. Go 6 months without a paycheck? Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I mean, we've kind of joked about the fact that, dude, we've improved our house. We've done some things that we would never have done before. And not that we're wasting our money, but it's just been people have been generous and given us things and helped us out through things. And it's like, wow, God, I trust you. You're coming through. You're awesome. You know, now we're loaded because we're getting paid. So, you know, but otherwise, God has come through. And I've been there. I'm not saying this to you. Hey, you need to trust God. I've been there. I've been through this. We are there. We are going through this place where God has to come through, because if God doesn't come through, we're screwed. But he does, and he continues to do. So surrender is another thing. We don't want to give up control. We don't want to surrender and say, God, you're in charge. The last reason here is stupidity. Because we sometimes just get stupid, and we forget what God did for us. Well, I don't want to give. I don't know. I don't know if I can afford to give up that. That was worth a lot to me, or we need that money for something. And God says, you know what? There is a debt that is huge, and I'm going to give something that you could never repay. I'm going to give you my son. I'm going to offer my son. Scripture says, and we looked at it a few weeks ago, it says, while we were still sinners, God sent his son to die for us. So we start thinking like, oh, well, I don't know if I can afford this. I'm glad God didn't think that way. I'm glad God didn't say, well, it's not wise stewardship for me to give up part of myself and my son for the sake of these people that don't even care about me. Because it's not wise stewardship. You get that? I'm glad God didn't say, well, if I give up Jesus, my son, how are things going to work out? So maybe I won't. Because we would be stuck in our sin, destined for hell. But God, while we are still sinners, and of course you know this passage, even if you've never been to church except for this day, but God so loved the world, John 3:16. God so loved the world that he what? He gave his only son Jesus for us because of his love. So when we start thinking like, I don't know if I can handle that, I don't know if I can give that up, just take a moment and just reflect, think, wait a second. Wow, God has done so much for me. How can I not? God has been so good to me. How could I not do this? God didn't wait for me to deserve it. He sent Jesus anyway. And so that's the thing. So just don't be stupid. Let's give. God has given us so much. Even the very breath that we take is a gift. Everything that we have, everything that we are, is a gift. So let's not forget that and live generously.